Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. And our guest today is a returning guest from our Streetcar Named Desire episode, Krista Moy. She is an LA-based comedian, writer, and artist, and mom to her tuxedo cat, Sokala Tortoise, and newborn baby. In January, she gave birth at home in the midst of the LA wildfires. Krista went to Parsons School of Design, majoring in fashion during the height of Project Runway, once sharing an elevator with Tim Gunn. She later transferred to Otis College of Art and Design for her BFA, and there she won a Thimble Award for her O'Neill wetsuit. She has since worked as a toy designer in both New York and LA. She is also known for her stand-up comedy and writing. She most recently opened for Maria Bamford at a local open mic. And as a fan of the mystical and supernatural, she enjoys reading tarot and is a certified Reiki master. Hello!
Hello, Erin. Thank you so much for having me back.
I have to ask, what is your O'Neill wetsuit? Tell me more about that.
That was a each year we design under a mentorship. So my mentorship was O'Neill, and I designed a wetsuit for O'Neill that had like the assignment was to like make laser cut holes all throughout your design. So mine kind of had like these laser cut holes going like all the way down. It was just like a shirt, a long sleeve and a pant. And yeah, I got the Thimble Award for that. It was really cool.
I had no idea that you had a history in fashion. I had no clue.
Yeah, so I like just recently started talking about that in conjunction with like my writing because I'm part of a Start with Eight mentorship program, and my mentor Minoti was saying, "You have such a cool, rich history. Like, why don't you ever talk about this?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know. Like, if I'm, applying for writing fellowships and things like that, like, do I really want to talk about other things that I've done?" And she's like,
Right.
"Absolutely." So that's kind of where I've started to incorporate like sharing a little bit more
Yeah.
about my like whole entire history. So I think it like makes for a more interesting background of who I am as a writer.
I think that's fantastic. Our book today is from 1954 by William Golding, Lord of the Flies.
Yes, such a classic.
So, 1954, a little history, is the year of firsts everywhere. It's also the year my dad was born, shout out. But I think the biggest thing is Brown v. Board of Education passes, which says that segregation is unconstitutional. What surprised me, it was a unanimous vote. That is really surprising to me that, I don't know, anything would ever be unanimous. But there's first mass vaccination of kids against polio in Pittsburgh. Elvis's first single, That's All Right, comes out. It's the first Burger King opens. There's the first TV dinner sold. The first Godzilla movie comes out.
Wow,
And
Godzilla.
yeah. And then a little bit about William Golding. This was his debut novel. Insane.
Yeah.
His father taught science at his school, and his mom was a suffragette who told him, I think, Cornish ghost stories as he was growing up. He was a teacher for 16 years with a 5-year break to be in the Navy for World War II. He's at Normandy on D-Day. And there was apparently the editor removed an entire early section about the characters evacuating a nuclear war. And there's little tiny elements of it throughout, but not much. And apparently this book was, and they even reference it in the last like 2 pages, this book was like a direct response to a book called The Coral Island, which is about three boys who crash land and through Christianity and imperialism civilize this island. And William Golding, which this makes sense coming from a man who was a teacher for 16 years, said, no, that's not what would happen. So, what is your story with this book? How did it come into your life?
So as I was telling you when I like signed up for this, I don't actually remember, like pretty sure it was in high school, maybe 10th grade, maybe 11th grade. I'm honestly not sure. All I remember is the impact that it left on me, that like it just haunted me. Like just the whole Piggy character and Simon, like they're like the savagery of these children. I was just aghast. I was like, wow, this book is wild, truly wild. And to show children in this way, I had never seen that. It was my first time experiencing a book of this nature, and it just left such a it would just pop into my head every now and then, like the imagery of the pig and, you know, like Piggy's specs and like all of these like random things would just like be floating around in my brain like ever since. And I don't know if any other book has really left such an impact of like the imagery.
The imagery, I'm glad you said that because it is so like impactful. Do you think you read it for a class or do you think you found it on your own?
Yeah, I definitely read it for a class. I can't remember like what teacher it was, or you know, it wasn't as distinct as the last episode with Streetcar Named Desire, where I literally remembered every detail of how this book entered my life. Like, I truly don't remember which teacher I had, but I remember really enjoying the book. I remember just being like, you know, absorbing it like a sponge and just being like, what is going on with these kids? This is insanity.
I mean, for those who don't know, Lord of the Flies is about a group of boys who crash land on an island. And I think the three main characters are Ralph, who takes on this leadership position automatically. There's Piggy, who is this overweight kid with asthma. His glasses end up becoming a very critical part of the story. And the antagonist is this other boy, Jack, who really seems to just want to lean into the savage aspects, go crazy, have fun. He's all about hunting and things like that. And they're both approaching the effort to survive in very different ways. And also I think there was a movie in the works that was an all-female cast, and then Yellow Jackets came out, and they said, never mind.
Oh, I still haven't watched Yellow Jackets, so.
Yeah, I've only seen a couple episodes. And then
Is it a response to Lord of the Flies? Is it like a
it's
parody?
a bunch of girls crash land, on an island. So there's definitely that. And but I've only seen a couple episodes. I've been like watching it, at a remove on TikTok and Instagram. And so I think there is an element of religion that comes into it. And we definitely have sort of something definitely very spiritual in this version. So I sort of wanted to touch on because when I mentioned it earlier, you kind of lit up. There is a whole section removed at the beginning about the fact that they are evacuating a nuclear war. Did you remember that aspect of it?
I didn't really remember that aspect of it, and you know, when revisiting this book, I really couldn't remember like why they were on this desert island. And I actually just recently finished the entire series of Lost. I don't know if you've ever
Oh, yeah.
watched that show. I had never watched it before. And so it was really funny to like take on this reading Lord of the Flies while I was just finishing up Lost and seeing kind of like the parallels of like that show with this book. It's like the adult version of Lord of the Flies in a sense. It's way more like ridiculous, but there's a lot of parallels of like the leader, like Jack is the leader in Lost, and instead this would be like Ralph would be probably Jack's character. And then there's like, I would say Sawyer is probably Jack's character in Lord of the Flies. Like he's the antagonist. It's like very like anarchist, like screw the system, like, you know, coming from like a place that probably is just like, I don't want to follow the rules. I just want to do my own thing. And then there's like Piggy, which like I don't know, I guess like maybe would be like Hugo or like Hurley in Lost, like, the guy that's always getting picked on for like being overweight and just like can't really like physically keep up sometimes. And you know, it's interesting to see the perspective of like, oh, they're actually shipwrecked because of war. And like when you say the time that it was published and created, I was researching that Golding like served in the military. You mentioned that, right? So I think that's like a great perspective that he is bringing to this, and also like coming out of like time of war and like so much going on where civilization is kind of being threatened with chaos. And so for the setting to be these kids were like mistakenly like shot down thinking it's like a warship and now they're shipwrecked on this island by themselves, I think adds so much more like drama to the setting. And like you mentioned, it's related to, or it's like a response to Coral Island, and it's almost like a satire of that. Because it's like, oh, what if there's this like fun, story of like kids inhabiting an island and making peace with each other and creating a civilization? What if we turn that on its head and make them violent and show like the true nature of humanity that brings out kind of the worst, darker parts of what we're capable of as a human race?
I really appreciated how little backstory we got about the characters, which is kind of atypical for me because everything is, I don't want to say it's simple, but the ideas are laid out pretty clearly. And the imagery is so strong because there's this pig head that is the Lord of the Flies. And there's I think he's like a demon or something. In Christianity, there's Beelzebub, whose name literally translates to Lord of the Flies, and he's the god of pride and warfare, which I think is so purposeful here. But that there's a like a man stuck in a parachute, that was the thing that fascinated me. And I think the book, it really didn't interest me until like 40% of the way through. And I think it's when that paratrooper comes in that I was sitting up really ready to pay attention. I think it was even, I have it highlighted in my copy right at the beginning of chapter 6, but a sign came down from the world of grown-ups, though at the time there was no child awake to read it. And they have this unspecified beast haunting kind of the forest. I don't know if this is explicit. Do we know what the beast is? Did you have ideas or theories?
I mean, they like think that it's like a snake at first, but then I think it just becomes, it evolves into like, is there a ghost? Like, are we being like this, like, sort of mystical, supernatural explanation for the beast, like, kind of evolves. And so I was kind of like similar to the show Lost, not to keep talking about that, but like,
No,
it's
good.
sort of this like, what is going on? And like, is it something to like that's gonna physically get us? Or is it like this supernatural, like ghost sort of thing that's going on, which makes it even like spookier and really freaks out the little'uns? And I think that as a society, like it kind of just symbolizes like a fear that starts like when you're either young or older, like you can just get scared of something, and it's like the symbol of the beast, of just that this is what we're all afraid of, and it's like that unifying thing that everyone is just like, we've gotta like figure this out. What's the beast? How do we? And they even offer like, this is an offering to the beast so
That's
that
the pig
we'll be
head.
left alone. Yeah, the pig head on the stake, which is like kind of ridiculous. Like a beast, if it were truly like a wild animal, that would not be like a sufficient offering.
I think I sort of thought of it as like there's this really young little'un, like you said, who has a birthmark on his face who goes missing after like the first day. So I think in my mind, it was like maybe it's him. Maybe it's just this dead paratrooper that I think Simon comes upon and is like bright blue and it's kind of waving and snapping in the wind. But I think as much of it is about humanity and savagery, I was surprised how much Ralph, the lead character, and Piggy, who's his, right-hand man, are this embodiment of a desire to control the uncontrollable. You just got shot down and you're trying to bring order and sense as best as you can. And of course, that doesn't survive in the midst of it all.
Yeah, I mean, these little kids are like little kids, they need adults to protect them for a reason, because it's like really hard to, they tried their best to act like adults. And even Piggy says repeatedly throughout the book, you're acting like a pack of kids. Look at you, like a pack of kids. And it's like they literally
They
are
are
a pack of
kids.
kids. And for Piggy to judge them is very ironic, because he is truly a child as well. But I think he's the character that symbolizes like that very like buttoned up, like civilized, adult-like person that, just wants the most order. He loves rules. He's like, as long as we have rules, we'll be okay. And then there's like the complete opposite spectrum of Jack, where he's just like, no, like I'm just gonna run naked and like paint my body and like kill and hunt and meat, meat, just like shouting meat like all the time.
Yeah.
Very primal.
Yeah. I was very much picky. Loved rules, loved order
Yep,
and
same.
systems. But I think the older I get, the more I am like, wouldn't it be nice for a day to be Jack? Wouldn't it be nice and like safe control? Again, it's all about control.
Yeah.
Controlled situations where I can lose my mind. And I think that's very appealing, but also frightening.
Yeah, it's definitely intriguing. And I think that's what like caught me the most about this book is just the sort of like fantasy and freedom of like, and they do talk about that as like a response to the Coral Island, because it's like this common thing of wanting to be shipwrecked, wanting to just be on an island by yourself with like no civilization, nothing, and be able to do whatever you want. But then it's like, well, if that actually happened, like that'd be terrifying. So, you know, there's a pull and a draw toward that, but also it's like, okay, when does this end? If you're actually in the situation, Piggy says, like, I forget what chapter, it's like later on in the book, he's like, I just want to go home. Like, I just want, they fantasize now about being clean and taking a bath and like being able to like brush their hair and like all these things that like for kids, that's kind of an annoyance when you're little. You don't want to brush your teeth. You don't want to like bathe and all that, but it becomes something that they long for, and it's like the flip side of the fantasy.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. It is definitely like Robinson Crusoe, Treasure Island, and all of that, Swiss Family Robinson. But it's something that kept coming back to me. Who do you think the audience is for this book? So many, I never read it in school, but so many people do. And I just don't, like, from a publishing aspect, who is this for? Because it's definitely understandable for kids. Like, it's readable, certainly.
I feel like it would be horrifying if I read this as a kid, or I don't even know, like you said, it was kind of hard to get into. Like, I don't know if I could read it as a kid because the language is pretty sophisticated, I would
That's true.
say, for a young child. So I don't know if it's necessarily for like little kids, especially with all the violent imagery, like the spilling of the blood, and like when Piggy dies, it's like there's red everywhere. Just that would be like terrifying for me as a little kid. And I think even as a high schooler and I read it, I was a little like, this is disturbing. Like, I can't get this out of my mind. But I think it's probably, I would say young adult, maybe. Yeah, maybe young adult, but even like an adult novel, I think is appropriate too. I think many adults would read this and find it very fascinating, especially because of the introduction of a naval officer at the end that kind of gives that like perspective of like, wow, like coming upon these kids. And he thinks like, oh, just fun and games, having a little fun, you know, playing a little game. And they all start crying, and he's like, awkward, and has to turn his back.
Yeah, that moment was so striking that this like British officer comes in and Ralph is literally running for his life. There's the like action sequences in this were breathtaking.
Yes, absolutely. And like just the heightening of it, like he does a really good job of like really raising the stakes. Like there's the now the whole island is engulfed in flames, and he's literally, like you said, running for his life, and all the savages are like chasing after him, and they're all like muddy and dirty and covered in paint and blood, and they've just killed Piggy like not too long ago, and it's just this heightening of the stakes, and then bam, they're brought back to the civilization that they came from, and this adult is like there to pretty much check them and be like, what are y'all doing? Like, what is going on? And then they burst into tears, and they're just like confronted and full of shame about what's been going on. And I think it's probably the first time they're truly conscious of like, what are we doing? And yeah, I think that's like such a human response to be like in a scenario where you're kind of swept away and carried away with like whatever is going on around you. And then you just kind of reflect back, and there's a moment where you have to stop and look at yourself. And then it's just like, oh, what am I doing? You know, what have I done? Yeah.
There's even a moment where Jack has face painted for a lot of the book, and there's a line, I'm not gonna be able to find it, where it is like, it's so nice to like, he put down his identity, basically, and he could just be this kind of bundle of impulses that, and I think it makes sense, like, that. It's like so English that there's so British that there's so much, it's so buttoned up. And I think the more puritanical you are, that when you do set loose, it is an even bigger fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like often in novels of that time, British boys were seen, and I listened to the audiobook of this, and Henry Golding has a really good description, and like he gives a good reasoning for how he decided to lay out this book. And he says like British boys were seen as so well behaved, and like there was never anything in literature that showed them in like a really savage way. And typically of that era, books where you come upon an island, the savages are the, people that are inhabiting the island. It's not like the colonizers that come, it's the people that are dwelling there. But in this case, they are the savages. It's in all of us, and even, the little buttoned up British boys from the military school or wherever they're from. So it's so interesting to see that juxtaposition of they're supposed to be the civilized ones. They're supposed to be the ones that follow the rules and do as they're told. And to see that they have this capability within them, I forget who it is that says in the end, like, this is like what we're crying for, is that like we're all capable of this darkness. That this is like, what's that? Maybe it's Ralph, I think, in the end. That is like we're weeping for the darkness that we've witnessed and that lives in us all, which is so powerful. And
And it's, I don't know, the cultural history of the UK as well as I do the US, but it's the mid-50s, and at least in the US, it's this huge patriotic boom. So I think to coming off the success of the war, so I think that is also an added element of we think so highly of ourselves and yet are so susceptible, and that no matter what you do, it's going to be within you.
Definitely.
There are so many like incredible tentpole moments in this, Piggy's death, Simon's death, where they think the beast is going to come out and the beast is Simon, little sort of spiritual, maybe mentally unwell Simon, who has this incredible moment with the pig head when he comes upon it. And there's a line where it's like, I was in you all along. Like, it was, you knew, didn't you? I'm part of you. Close, close, close. I'm the reason why it's no go, why things are what they are.
It's like chilling. It's truly chilling that this kind of wisdom is within this child. Simon is kind of like almost like the Christ-like character, I guess, in the story, where he's like the first to die, and he's trying to run to them and tell them like he found this parachuter, and like, that it's not the beast, it's actually like a person. And then they just like go chaotic on him and just like spear him to death, which is just like such a brutal way to die, and so violent to behave as children. And like, it just, the way he describes these death scenes too, like he really doesn't leave anything out. Like you can see it, like you can practically smell like what is going on. It's really, really powerful, the descriptive elements.
Absolutely. You mentioned Piggy's death, and I think it's sort of accidental. He falls onto all these rocks, but there is, I don't know if Golding says, like, and there's his brain, but that was certainly what I was imagining. It's
Yeah, he says
really.
something like his head like spilled with red or something, and then his body twitched the same way that like the sow did like in the last bits of life. And I'm just like, ugh, like it like turns your stomach, but it's also like it stays with you. Like you can absolutely see it, and it's tragic and it's gruesome. but it's also powerful.
Yeah. That scene where they kill Simon and the following scenes where it's like the next morning and everyone is just has this implicit agreement to not talk about it, but
Yeah,
there's
even
blood
Piggy.
everywhere. Yeah. I wonder how much like being a teacher informed this book, because I think that's huge. They have a lot of emotional depth and complexity, I think.
Absolutely. I think to be able to like paint these children with such capacity of denial, like Piggy's truly Delulu. He's like, no. This is not murder. We were scared. Like we thought it was something and he wasn't, but we were just acting out of fear. And then Ralph was like, I was not scared. Like I was fully here. He's like, I don't know what I was, but I wasn't scared. And like, he surely should not have died. So he was, I think, the only one crying about what happened and just really emotional. And I think probably as he saw himself as a leader, he felt a sense of responsibility
Definitely.
for the lives of the other children because he's like, I'm supposed to be in charge and like, look at what happened.
Yeah, it's those moments where you're reminded that they're children, because they're bickering, I want to be in charge, I don't want to play by your rules, I just want to go crazy. Those are really kind of devastating when you're reminded of.
And I think like in the beginning, he does such a good job of setting the scene of them being children with like even so much as calling them Piggy. I remember being like, that is so messed up that he confides in Jack, like, yeah, they used to call me Piggy in school, but that's the only name I don't want to be called. And immediately, or I mean,
Use
sorry,
it.
Ralph, he tells Ralph this. And Ralph is like, oh, this is Piggy. And
There we
everyone
go.
starts laughing. And it's this whole, and he was like, dude, like, I told you not to call me Piggy. He's literally never referenced by anything else for the
Never
rest
find
of
out
the
his
book.
name.
Yeah, we never know his true name, which is really sad. And I've always like had such a soft spot for Piggy, even though he's a little bit annoying at times. I'm like, that was me. Like, I was definitely the kid that was like the outcast and like trying to play by the rules. And I feel like a sense of like protectiveness of Piggy and, you know, the way he has to like demand, like, I have the conch, like, everyone listen to me. And nobody really cares. They're like, whatever, like, shut up. Like, who cares that you have the conch? But yeah, the way that they all tease him in the beginning is very childlike. Then it kind of escalates into really like violent and gruesome behavior. And then he always brings it back with little moments that remind you they are children. And these are not, you know, adult, like they're acting like adults. They're acting like they have full control and they want control of each other. But in the end, they're just little kids. And like, what is the difference of them acting this way and like playing pretend? Like, it's kind of like when make believe goes way too far.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up the conch, because that is it's the talking stick for the kids. And so it's very early on, it's a huge symbol and piece of imagery throughout. And I completely understand this of like when it is proposed of like you can only talk if you have the shell. That's how we're gonna do it. That's how we're gonna impose order. And immediately everyone's like, that's childish. That's silly. We know this is made up. We know we can just talk even without it. So I think that was interesting of like even trying to put into place a structure, it feels false.
It also kind of, as an adult reading this, I'm like, there's so many rules of being an adult where I'm just like, that's dumb. Like, who made that up? But I feel like so many of our rules as adults feel the same as like a conch. And it's like, you just wanted to make that up so that like people couldn't talk when they wanted to talk or whatever it is. I think that that's such an interesting perspective as, you know, an adult and as a mom now that I have of this book that I don't remember like really grasping how it relates back to adult behavior. It's like a mimicry of being adults, and like you said, it's a silly rule that like obviously everyone can talk without the conch, but Piggy is like he rides the hardest for the conch. This is the rule that I believe in the most. And everyone, like, come on, like, shut up, you guys. I've got the conch. And they're like, whatever. Like, who cares?
Oh, I was
But
so that kid of
yeah.
stomping my feet and like it's not going the way I planned. And
Yep.
oh
Listen
god.
to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Totally.
Yeah.
Poor piggy.
Poor Piggy. And he has the like he has his glasses, which they use to light fires. And
Yeah.
it's like again, a great image, but it's so interesting that, like, the quote weakest of them all, because he has asthma and he can't run, has this absolute key and huge, like, survival advantage. This book is often banned or challenged, which I kind of understand from just the incredible amount of violence and imagery in the second half. Understand, not condone the ban, but understand. But I think I also saw a mention of like it is such a dark and pessimistic and like fatalistic view of humanity that I wonder if there's any kind of like notes of hope in it. Is that the kids bursting into tears at the end and the recognition? I wonder if there's any hope there.
Yeah, I think to me it seems like there is that burst of hope at the end because they finally are confronted with themselves. As an adult, there's so many times in my life where I've been confronted with myself and like, what am I doing? Like, what path have I, found myself on? And I think in these times that we're in, these very trying times of just like, what are we doing? What chaos is happening? I hope that we too have our, crying on the beach moment as a society where we can finally stop what we're doing and look at ourselves and be like, what is happening? Where, how did we get here? And feel that sense of shame that all the boys kind of have when they have woken up from their, I guess, fever fantasy and realize like, people are dead. You know,
I
we've
wonder like what
committed
that
atrocities.
like what that that plane ride back is, and we don't really know. So like Jack's kids are they're like I think it's so funny that they are like this embodiment of kind of the masculine, or rather the savage, which we associate with the masculine, and yet they're like all in their like choir uniforms and they're singing. And I mean that's a cultural like UK American difference, but that was so like even having not read the book, knowing the direction it's going to, that was really surprising. And I was also like I just now in talking about it realized that like they'll get back. I think Piggy's parents are already dead. He's living with an aunt. So there if the aunt has survived, whatever the nuclear apocalypse, no one's gonna know Piggy's real name to tell his aunt that he died. You know?
Exactly. They'll just be
That
like, oh, Piggy. And I feel like Piggy's the only one that really has like some semblance of a backstory. Nobody really has like anything that they talk about from the before times. Piggy's the only one that's like, oh, my auntie, my asthma, like I was never allowed to this, like it was my asthma.
I think
And
someone, maybe Ralph, mentions that his dad is in the Navy or something like
yeah, and
that.
that's like pretty much it. But it's not like this thing that he goes on and on about. Like Piggy's like constantly like, my auntie, my auntie. Like you're so right that who's gonna even know to say like, yeah, he's dead, and it'll just be like this mystery of like what happened to Piggy and or whatever his real name is. So sad, so tragic.
It's such an incredible, 187 page tome that does so much. And I do kind of wish it had led it, like leaned into the mysteries and sort of the oddities of the parachute and things like that. But
Yeah, that's
I,
never really explained.
yeah. There are some interesting moments really early on when they're first getting sort of situated that really spoke to me as a hallmark of childhood. Ralph says, "This belongs to us, this island." And then this is about the, I think, the whole group. Eyes shining, mouths open, triumphant. They savored the right of domination. They were lifted up, were friends. That right of domination, of asserting your own space and your own control, really spoke to me as childhood.
Yeah, that's definitely like a child fantasy and just a human fantasy. I think like we all want to find our bit of triumph in life and like some place that we can have control over in this world where we, as we grow, we have less and less control maybe of what we can do. But I think that is such a childlike desire that is so beautifully put in the beginning. And even to like the description of the island and they're going to explore and like figure out like where we are. Like they aren't even sure if they're on an island. And then they go to the mountaintop and then they're like, okay, this is water all around. We actually are on an island and we have to focus on rescue. And that I think is why Ralph becomes the chosen leader, is because he's the most like, we need to focus our energies on getting rescue, signal fire. And he lets Jack, I guess, have a little bit of power by saying, you guys can hunt because we will need food. And I think that is maybe like the first downfall of them as a society, is Jack becomes drunk with this power that he's given, and then he just like overtakes everything and becomes like a total anarchist and wanting to, in the end, kill Ralph. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the thing that kind of galvanizes him is that Ralph, who does not really want to be in charge, I think that's always sort of the way it goes. But it is like, oh, I'll throw him a bone. You know, this is important to him, I'll let him do that. It's kind of a generosity of like, you don't actually have any power here, but I'll let you have this.
Yeah, everyone obviously wants me, but I guess you can have your little club. I find it fascinating researching this a few days ago and learning that this book was submitted like 20 something times, getting rejected like 20 something times before it was finally published. And I think that's very telling of the time period that this is a very, like you said, controversial book, sometimes banned, and shows such a violent nature of children that is extremely enticing. But I can totally see where people would be like, we cannot publish this book. Are you kidding me? This is lunacy.
Yeah, the best books are the ones I can talk about least. It's like that incredible line in Emma that's, if I loved you less, I could talk about it more. Which we need to do more Jane Austen on this podcast. You only done Pride and Prejudice, work through all of them. Whatever.
I don't know why the little ones getting like eating like a bunch of bad fruit and like getting diarrhea and like pooping themselves like stood out to me
It
as
did though.
just
I was just thinking about that. I was too. 'Cause I doubt they talk about that in Treasure Island, you
No,
know?
they don't. Like it's a very like specific choice to show like the little kids like just not even being able to recognize good fruit and just like getting stomach aches and diarrhea and just like not being able to care for themselves. And they don't want to go hunt. Like they're not going to go out and hunt on their own without Jack kind of shepherding that. And so they're just like, eh, we're just gonna forage and find whatever we can find and eat it and get an upset stomach. And it's just like such a sad image of these like bloated children with like poopy pants and no way to clean themselves.
And they're all terribly sunburned and sweaty.
Bear children, English children, just like all red and like just passing out in the shade, like trying to stay cool in this hot island. It sounds like he really brings a realism element to this fantasy that would seem so ideal without realizing like, oh yeah, it's actually come noon, it's very hot and you don't see the sun and there's nothing to do but find shade.
Did you ever have those fantasies about desert islands? Or I associate this book so much with pirates. I think that's maybe the romance
Yeah,
of
like
it.
totally like Treasure Island, or just like, as a kid, you're just like, I'm gonna run away. Like, I don't know if you ever did that as a kid, but like, there would be like a couple times where I'm like, I'm gonna run away. And I literally just end up at like a friend's house or something. But there's like this fantasy of like, screw parents. Like, I'm just gonna go off on my own and take care of myself. And that seems like such a good idea when you're a little kid until you like, maybe are forced into a situation like that and realize I have no way of even feeding myself correctly without adult help.
It's all of those little tiny things. It's I think it's as age of like, oh, I didn't realize how much like forethought went into life.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and it is such a fantasy to do, to just be shipwrecked and to be on your own as a kid.
And have a place that you can control. It is like, is all media just about control?
Yeah. I think that's like one of the big desires for us all is just having a sense of control.
I think this is the moment where they're doing the dance that ends up with Simon being killed. It's interesting how they talk around things of they never say like, and then Simon comes out of the forest and we stab him. And they just mention Simon was crying out something about a dead man. And we're like, oh, is Simon's in this scene? And yet
Yeah.
even before that happens, before they sort of end up killing something, they talk about Piggy and Ralph found themselves eager to take a place in this demented but partly secure society. They were glad to touch the brown backs of the fence that hemmed in the terror and made it governable. That was incredible. Just after that, they're talking about they keep shouting and chanting as though the repetition would achieve safety of itself. There was the throb and stamp of a single organism.
It's like the total mob mentality that takes over, and just almost like I want to say it's like compliance, but like not even like they're being told what to do. But I think there is that like mob mentality of compliance where you're just like swept away with the situation. And I think that's what Piggy is like trying to describe in the aftermath of Simon's death to Ralph. He's like, we can't be at fault for this. Like, we were just like in the moment. We were scared and it was a storm. And I think like even he doesn't realize like that this was really wrong to do because in the moment everything's so chaotic. There's a lot going on. And you know, I'm sure maybe it didn't happen that fast, but like in hindsight, like, you know, it seemed like, oh, it happened so fast. And you know, we didn't know. And I think they were just in such a primal, like, unconscious state that they didn't even realize what's going on. And when you're put in situation, like I recently gave birth at home in January, and I remember like being in like a very primal state when like once my water broke, like my body just like started reacting, and like you just kind of like lose control, and I went like somewhere that like I truly have never been, and I was almost observing what was happening to me and observing my life. And, you know, not comparing like what these children are going to childbirth, but just kind of that, like, when you like reach that edge and that point of like, am I beast or man? And you're not really sure. I think that's kind of the edge these kids were pushed to in this situation where they were just sort of like overtaken by these primal urges, and they just like let go and found themselves like murdering this innocent boy, Simon.
I think a lot of people look at this text, or at least I think I've heard it. People say, like, well, if it was all girls, there's no way this would happen. And of course, there's yellow
Yeah.
jackets. Do you
Yeah.
agree with that idea? Because I don't think I do. I think it would go better, but.
Yeah, I don't think I do. I think Golding does talk about that in the introduction of his audiobook. And he says, the only reason I don't write about girls being here is because I've been a little boy. So that's like the only perspective I can really offer. And then he wanted to make sure that like this wasn't about sex. So he didn't make it like a boy girl inhabiting this island because then he would have had to introduce like that topic. And he's like, it's not really about that. This is more about like who we are as people and the capabilities of what little boys could do on an island. And so I think that it definitely could have the same like scenarios for women. I think I'd like to think that women are more peaceful, but I think, you know, people are people, and when you reach a point of when it's like survival and you know you're trying to establish power or assert your own power, I think that that very much can apply to little girls as well. I think it would probably be even more interesting,
Yeah.
in my opinion, if to see little girls do this, because even more so,
Yeah.
girls are expected to be, well behaved and, not at that time especially, not
Yeah.
speak out of turn and just be very like demure and very like proper and pretty and manners and all these things. Etiquette was very much pushed onto girls of the time. So
Yeah, it would be different, but would probably end up in a really similar place.
yeah.
It's not like from Golding, but there's a little after section that Golding described this theme or the book as the theme is an attempt to trace the defects of society back to the defects of human nature. The moral is that the shape of a society must depend on the ethical nature of the individual and not on any political system, however apparently logical or respectable. I think that's very current.
Yeah, I definitely think like his experience in the military service plays a big role, and also, both the teacher and the military experience, because just with the ending when the naval officer finds them and he's like so unable to hold space for their emotions, he's embarrassed and like turns his back on them. He's like, this is too much. Like, you little boys are very emotional. I cannot deal with this. But yet, like, he's probably seen so much worse in war. And the fact that he's like judging them for being so uncivilized when he's literally like an officer of like war and chaos and destruction, like, that's his job title. And because it's not in this like the setting of, the military, then all of a sudden it's considered like improper, which I think is very ironic and such a telling of the theme that Golding was trying to convey.
I mean, he was there on D-Day. You know, he was on the beaches on Normandy to my research. And yeah, so it's so I just keep wanting to say everything's so British, but I think it's so
It is.
interesting that he turns his back. He sees these like, I don't know, dozens of crying children and is like, I'll give you a moment to work that out rather than. Like, how do you see a 10-year-old who's so traumatized and not like hug him?
And they literally just confess to murder. He's like, only two have died. He's like, two? Like, what? How? And then they all just like start sobbing. It's like no comfort, no like empathy, impulse, nothing. Just like, okay, this is weird. Let me just give you a moment, compose yourself.
Those kids are gonna be so messed up.
So messed up. They're gonna need so much therapy.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
Would you consider required reading?
I think so, because just because Lord of the Flies is such a reference, I've heard it so much in like pop culture and like in general in literature, because it is that, like I said, it's like lost, but like with little kids. So I think, like, I don't know, maybe there wouldn't even be a Lost if there wasn't a Lord of the Flies. Who knows? Like,
I 100% agree,
it's definitely like a unique and classic shipwrecked story that really, I think, needed to be told and still is applicable to this day. Like, I really enjoyed it as an adult rereading this, and I think it very much applies to the chaos of our society today and how things can just like spin out of control. So, yeah, definitely required reading.
I agree. I mean, it's a classic for a reason, and it's so short. It's really worth the time. Is there anything you'd like to plug as we're here at the end?
Not really. Being a mom now.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, hopefully I'll have some stuff coming up. But yeah, you can just follow me, I guess, on TikTok, Krista.moy, and Instagram. Those are my main two. But yeah, this was such a delight. So much fun to go over this fun book.
Me too. Okay, I will end the recording.